This is episode number 551 of the Secret Identity Podcast for October 14th, 2013. Today on Secret Identity, in our news desk, we're going to talk about a new Kickstarter project, as well as what we're hoping to get out of this year's New York Comic Con. Our reviews this week will be Adventures of Superman number 5 and Jonah Hex number 22. The BoobTube and Big Screen Bonanza this week will feature How I Met Your Mother, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Always Sunny in Philadelphia, and more. And this Saturday morning special is going to feature The Thing. Finally, our creator spotlight this week is Mr. Mike Mignola, the creator of Hellboy, who Matt sat down with at Boston Comic Con 2013.
Are you sure this is legal?
I don't know.
It's fun though, isn't it?
A family full of midgets is not considered kids! That's a game!
Bond. James Bond.
I am your father.
And welcome everybody to Secret Identity. This is Brian Letendre here, as always, with the lovely, the talented, the wonderful to be around Matthew A. Herring. How are you today, sir?
Doing well, especially in the fact that we have Mike Mignola on the show. Dude doesn't do a lot of interviews.
No, and this is a good one that he does with you.
Great guy.
I will preface by saying there are a couple of curse words that you'll hear in this interview, but overall, I would rate it a PG-13.
And it wasn't cursed at me either. He wasn't saying, like, get out of here, you bleep, bleep, and bleep, bleep. We cut those out.
No, he gets into a very interesting conversation about, well, of course, you ask him a bit of the origin story.
Yep.
But you guys touch on a lot of different things, and he talks about a Batman story that he wrote once, and he talks about some of the people that he's worked with in the past. It's a fascinating interview, and he seems like a pretty cool guy.
Very cool guy. Nice guy.
We'll get into that a little bit later, but of course, as you listen to this, we have just come home from New York Comic Con. But as we record this, we are getting ready to go to New York Comic Con. And so as we think about New York Comic Con this year, what is it that, because we've done this for how many years now?
Oh, this has got to be 7 or 8.
Right. So you know that you're going to see a lot of the same stuff at New York Comic Con every year.
Yep.
What is it that is the draw for you now, other than us going and doing interviews? What's the draw for you at this year's New York Comic Con?
One of the things that I'm going to do, the big thing that I think I'm doing is I am going to be kind of looking out for a lot of people, the cosplayers dressed in Doctor Who stuff.
Yep.
Because I am really fascinated by a lot of the costuming that's going on with that. And I'm realizing that this book that I'm writing, I need to put some of those pictures in there because it is a fan's book. It's a book about a fan. So my focus a lot is going to be on a lot of the – of just trying to get some great costume pictures. But I'm realizing now that we have interviewed probably most – I mean, not – I don't want to say most of the people that will be here. But we've interviewed quite a few of the people that are already going to be there. And what I've been doing this year or the weeks leading into it is I'm going to be meeting with a lot of publishers and a lot of other certain creators in different ways – other than the average comic people. I'm talking to, you know, some people that are putting out some different types of comics. There's a guy who wrote a book about George Martin, the fifth Beatle, the producer of all the Beatles albums. I'm going to sit down and talk with
him. You did reach out to them?
Yeah.
Because that's so funny. When I got that press release, I was reading my emails this morning and I was going to forward it to you. I'm like, I'm sure Matt's on the same mailing list. I bet that he's already reached out to that person.
Yep, already reached out.
Lo and behold, you did.
So that's kind of what I'm doing a lot of, like with Avatar Press.
Yeah,
they're going to be right near Vin. I want to talk to those guys because I am curious as to how can such a niche comic company survive and not only survive, but really thrive in a market that isn't necessarily thriving at the moment like you would think. I mean, Avatar's doing great.
And I think in some ways they have, much like a Zenescope has done, is they have identified their target audience and they have zeroed in on that target audience and they continue to provide exactly what that target audience is looking for.
Yep.
And I feel like some of the publishers that have struggled have tried to be too many things to too many different people, whereas the ones who have really dialed in have done a better job of staying afloat. And then when they do expand, like I think of Boom in terms of expansion, they are very careful about how they do that. And they do that in a very methodical way. So when you see like what Boom has done with their kids line over the past couple of years, very well thought out, very smart licensing agreements with Adventure Time and Regular Show, along with some original stuff like Bravest Warriors, like that, just really well thought out. So I think those companies that are smart about how they identify that audience and they stick with it, and then when they do branch out, they're very thoughtful about how they do it, and they're not trying to be everything to everyone. Those are the ones that seem to be thriving right now.
Yeah. And my goal is to walk out with probably 8 to 10 solid interviews. And, you know, there was a few years ago where, I mean, I think I walked out with about 25 of them. And when you do that, you miss everything. And I really want to take an effort to enjoy the show this year.
Well, certainly connecting with people that we only see once a year is a big draw for going to a show like that. Also, seeing new things. You know, I love to go through Artist Alley and see creators there that this is their first time at New York Comic Con and books that I've never seen before. And so it's kind of this nice mixture of new and old. One of the things I'd like to do this year that I have really avoided for most of the years that we've gone to Comic Con is taking a few panels. I never go to panels. The only time I went to panels is when I was covering stuff for CBR and I had certain panels I had to go to and write up after that. But I'd like to go to some of those panels because I never do because most of the time, some of the bigger ones are just 2 hours in line.
Yep.
But I'm going to really look through the panel schedule and try to identify a couple to check out and maybe write up some stuff for the website on. So that I'm kind of excited about.
And I'm not bringing a ton of money this year because I have realized the more money I bring, the more I buy, and I don't need to buy a lot of stuff. So it's just going to be a lot of walking around, and I really want to focus on the indie creators. I want to spend a lot more time with them because, you know, within that community of people that are really trying to push their stuff for the first time is the Rob Andersons, is the George O'Connors, is the Vin Ferrantes, all the people that we have seen at their very first shows that we have become friends with. Those our new friends are out there just waiting for us to embrace them.
Right.
Or run from us.
Appropriately.
Either way. So what about you? What are you thinking?
Like I said, I think the panels are something I definitely want to check out. Seeing old friends there. I, like you, have gotten to the point where it's not about buying stuff at the show for me. I think the first couple of years that we went, I tried to bring as much spending money as possible. For whatever reason, I have less money now than I had 5 years. Maybe it's the kids, maybe, I don't know, but I don't have the disposable income that I had a few years ago. So I think the dumbest purchase I ever made was at, what was it? It was at Wizard World Philly.
Oh, you're
the stupid Fin Fang Foom Hero Clicks that was like $100. Now it's awesome.
Yeah,
it's
it
gigantic
is.
And it's super sweet and it's a nice piece to have at home. But what a waste of money. And I did that on the way out. I'm like, oh, they still have some of those? Here, take $100 off. So I don't do that anymore. You know, when I go now, especially now that I don't have to look for $20.99 books, it's just looking for runs of old books, some new things that really sort of catch my eye. And I usually end up buying things from some of the creators that we interview at the shows and things like that. But not having something that I have to buy is nice going into it this year. And I think my main goal for this year is to relax and enjoy the show.
That's what I'm doing.
Like you said, you know, it's getting more difficult every year to get to New York Comic Con. The press passes that they give out get fewer and fewer every year. Well, they probably get more, but they get stricter and stricter every year in terms of how they give them out. So a lot of podcasts and people that we've known are having trouble getting passes for the show now. The tickets sell out. The four-day packages sell out almost immediately. Yep. And so it's becoming a show that is growing so fast that it's getting harder to get into every year.
Yep.
And so we kind of have a mindset now of treating everyone like, hey, it could be our last.
Yep.
So we want to go and enjoy it. So I'm really looking forward to just sort of soaking it in this year and really getting the most out of this trip.
And we want to explain too on the website that for the week leading in, there were a ton of press releases. But the reason that you and I have been doing that is, first of all, we want to let everybody know. Image Comics sent us a press release that they want everybody to know when their creators are going to be at a certain table at a certain time and what they're doing. And for us to be invited to these shows and to have the relationships with New York Comic Con and Reed Pop and Image Comics and Dark Horse and all the things, we need to push their stuff. I mean, this is the time of year where it's a little more important to know who is going to be at the Dark Horse tables signing there than how I feel about word balloons on covers.
Well, I mean, we care about that.
Oh, yes, we care.
But we'll just care about it after we get back from New York Comic Con.
Exactly. And they've been great to us since we've been going, and it's going to be a phenomenal show. I'm wondering, I'm still waiting for when is it going to be so big that it just, this is the last big one and scale down and start over. But every year, it just keeps getting bigger and bigger.
One non-Comic-Con thing that we're going to talk about real quick is I put a story up about a Kickstarter project this week called In the Dark. Now, if you listen to, I think it was episode 539, you heard me interview Rachel Deering, and you heard me rave about her horror series, Anathema. Now, she has put together, I believe she's the editor of this collection, a 250-page anthology horror book. In the vein of Creepy and Eerie, yep, and Tales from the Crypt and things like that. Some amazing creators, including Tim Seeley and Matthew Dow Smith, and I'm forgetting off the top of my head who else is in that book now, but tons of awesome creators, great artists, great writers, putting together this awesome horror anthology. And it's on Kickstarter right now, and they were looking for $30,000 to put the whole thing together. Now, if you pledge $10,000, you get a PDF of the collection, 250 pages. If you pledge 50, you get the hardcover version of the book. And if you're a horror fan, especially old school horror, then this is kind of a no-brainer in terms of that collectible hardcover. They're almost funded. By the time you hear this, they probably will be funded, but the Kickstarter goes all the way through Halloween. So if you're interested in a great horror anthology, you should definitely go check this out and check out the story on Secret Identity because I put a link to it. So there you go. That is the news and discussion for this time around. We're going to take a quick break and come back and talk about some comic books. Unfortunately, we as comic readers have no control over the cost of comic books these days, but what we do have is the choice to shop where we can get the best discounts. Discount Comic Book Service is the online local comic shop. With discounts up to 75% off on select books, you can get more titles, take a chance on a new series, or just show some financial responsibility and save money. You can get your books bagged and boarded for pennies, and there are several shipping options to choose from. So join the legions of Secret Identity listeners who have made the switch by going to www.dcbservice.com and tell them that Secret Identity sent you. And we are back to talk about comics, and I think we're all DC today.
I think so. I'm starting with The Adventures of Superman number 5. This is the book that comes out with two or three different stories in each one. It's sort of a Superman anthology that doesn't necessarily take place in the current 52 or the current DC universe because Superman doesn't have a collar and he's wearing his red underwear in this one. So the first story starts out with like the space battle going on and you see that this ship crashes in Missouri and the government comes in. It's all military. And inside the ship, Brian, is a baby. Now, Superman knows a little thing or two about being a baby in a spaceship coming down in a crash landing in mid-America. So he gets down there, and as they're ready to blow the ship up, he comes flying down, stops the missiles, and says, wait a minute, you can't hear that? It's a baby crying. You're going to blow this ship up? So he goes in. It's a purple little baby, and he's trying to figure out, well, that's great. What do I do with this baby? And there's a dying alien next to him saying, you need to protect her. She's important. They're coming after her. And soon, someday, she's going to be a princess. So the baby's crying. He picks him up, tells the soldiers, you better get out of here because whoever's looking for her is coming. And then you have this whole flashback of what happens and how this poor baby gets in this predicament caught in the middle of a war and how these aliens are trying to find her and want to kill her. And the aliens are saying, well, you know what? Why don't we just start killing all the human children? You know, much like Herod did in Bible times, we'll do that. And then this super guy will have to give the baby up. So he's thinking about doing that. Superman brings the baby to an orphanage. Great showdown with this guy. Great story. Nathan Edmondson is the writer on this one. Yerdre Senar is the artist. Now, Yerdre, I believe he was doing Firestorm and just is an amazing artist. One of those guys that I think, you know what, if you're considering an artist on a Superman book, you ought to pick this guy. And then the next story we have is a shorter one by Kyle Killian, Pia Guerrera doing the art, Matthew Wilson, the colors, called The Way These Things Begin. And it's about these two kids that love Superman so much that they are trying to start something that could happen that would make Superman come and save them. And they're going to park a car on train tracks. And as this is going on, they're going to, you know, the train tracks. Superman's going to come save the day, save the kids, and they're going to be awesome. And they're going to meet them and things like that. But you see that Lex Luthor is doing some stupid stuff, gets himself thrown in jail, and starts causing some problems. And as Superman is doing this, you're seeing that the kids are now parked in a car on the train tracks waiting for Superman to come. And sadly, one of the kids gets killed while this happens because Superman doesn't come. The reason Superman doesn't come is because he was trying to stop Lex Luthor. So now Lex Luthor's in prison, and he's saying to this prison guard, saying, you know what? I really don't care that I lose to Superman all the time because you know what? Because he was too busy with me, I am pretty sure somewhere he kind of screwed him over and didn't do something that he should have. And you see that there's a funeral going on for this one kid, and the kid later on rips down all the Superman stuff off his wall. And you see that Lex Luthor, in a way, indirectly, had gotten exactly what he wants, and that is somebody angry at Superman. So I'm loving the Adventures of Superman. Until they fix the Superman in Action Comics line, this is what I'm going to be sticking with to get my soups.
Well, speaking of the DC Universe and very, very fun books, let's talk about All-Star Western featuring Jonah Hex, number 22. Now, if you remember the last time that we talked about Jonah Hex, he had somehow, after an encounter with Booster Gold, ended up in the present. And so now he is being held at Arkham Asylum. And of course, he's being looked at as a crazy person because he shot a couple of guys in an alley when he first got to Gotham because they were trying to rob someone. And he keeps saying that he's Jonah Hex and he's from a long time ago. So
and
he's
why am I in trouble for doing what I should have done?
Well, and that's the beauty of sort of the opening conversation here. So as the book opens, he is meeting with Dr. Jeremiah Arkham, who is the great grandson of Abraham Arkham, whoever the Arkham was that Jonah was palling around with. And Amadeus Arkham was his great grandfather. So he's getting interviewed and Jonah's sitting there saying, you know, you look like I see the family resemblance there. And he's saying, yep, Amadeus Arkham was my great grandfather, but we're here to talk about you. Jonah's smoking a cigarette and he looks at it and says, this cigarette tastes like poison. And the guy's like, well, of course it is. It's a cigarette. And Jonah takes that to mean that they're trying to poison him.
Yeah.
So he starts beating the snot out of Jeremiah Arkham and a couple of the guards there. He ends up having to get subdued. And he comes over with the pack of cigarettes and he's like, no, look at the label. You can see it's got all these warnings on it. And he's like, people know these things are poison and they still smoke them. He's like, yeah, I don't know. But it's just that funny moment of the cigarette tastes different to him than you know, when he rolled his own back in the day. So
I was going to say, Jonah rolls his own.
But basically the riot cops had to come in because he flipped out because he thought he was being poisoned. So they finally subdue him. They get him back at the table. He immediately lights up another cigarette and they're talking. And Jeremiah is saying, look, I need you to explain to me why you've adopted this persona of this Jonah Hex character. And Jonah's like, well, that's because that's who I am. And they're talking back and forth, and Jeremiah's saying, well, you're going to have to tell me then how you could possibly be this person out of time. And you realize that you murdered a couple of people, and Jonah's like, when is it murder protecting innocent people from being robbed? And Jeremiah says, well, you're not a police officer, are you? He says, no, I'm a bounty hunter. And Arkham's basically explaining to him, you can't just go around shooting people. You know, we have gun laws around here and things like that. And Jonah says, well, maybe if more people had guns, we wouldn't have these problems. And so they're having this conversation back and forth. And Jonah starts talking about how he used to hang around with Amadeus Arkham and he knew his mother. And Jeremiah started to get uncomfortable saying, I don't know what kind of research you did on my family history, but we've had a lot of trauma in our family and I don't appreciate you bringing it up. And Jonah's basically saying, yeah, I mean, his mother, Constance, I almost killed her one night because she was such a crazy old loon and she was, you know, suffering, but I kind of liked her and stuff like this. And so he's getting under Arkham's skin now because he sounds like he knows a lot of stuff about, you know, their family. But Arkham saying, I still am not hearing anything from you that you couldn't have found online. And Jonah says, well, look, do you still have a Wayne Casino in this town? And he says, I don't think so. He says, well, does that mean that Alan Wayne sold it off? I don't know. He says, well, why don't you do some research on it? Because when I rescued Alan Wayne's wife, Catherine, he gave me 30% of his casino. So that leads Jeremiah Arkham to go pay a visit to Bruce Wayne, which he says, you know, could you just look back in your family history and see if there was any stuff about a Jonah Hex and a casino and stuff like that? Which, of course, gets Bruce interested because he's like, this Jonah Hex, if I remember the descriptions of him where he had a big wound on his face, yep, that's him. So Bruce is now in the Batcave as Batman. Alfred's looking up the family documents, and sure enough, there's a document in there signed by Alan Wayne and Jonah Hex about him owning part of this casino. So now Batman's going to do a little looking into Jonah Hex because he just might be someone from the past. So we go back to Arkham Asylum, and Jeremiah has let Jonah put his uniform on. And they're sort of taking a walk around the grounds. And he's saying, I'm only letting you do this because I'm hoping that you'll share with me a little bit more sort of what you're doing and all this kind of stuff. And he says, I need to know more about you and I need you to start answering my questions. So, you know, what can you tell me about your parents? Did you have a happy childhood? That's probably a bad question to ask Jonah Hex. But then he says, were you breastfed? And there's a great moment where Jonah turns around and says, what did you just say to me? And he's like, I was only asking. The next thing you know, another 2 pages of beatings that he's thrown out all over the place. He takes him hostage and he decides that he's got to get out of here. So he grabs Jeremiah and he jumps off the side of the cliff and they end up in the water swimming through a sewer. So he's basically kidnapped this guy now and he's driving him around town in a brand new car and they don't know what to do. Meanwhile, Bruce has decided that he's not going to report the kidnapping to the police. He's going to find Jonah because now he wants to get information from him. So now you have Jonah and Jeremiah who are trying to cross the bridge and they run into the fact that there is a gang called the Mutants who are shooting up the place and the police are setting up barricades and a bunch of police officers has been shot. And so Jonah decides to take it upon himself to pick a fight with these guys. And he grabs the guns off of a wounded officer and ends up shooting these guys all up. And as the book ends, he's having this shootout on the bridge with these mutant guys. So if you wondered what it would be like if Jonah just showed up in modern day Gotham and how he would adjust to that, this is pretty much exactly how you think it would go. He's shooting people all over the place. And then people think he's crazy and he gets put in an asylum. It's kind of cool to see him operating here in modern Gotham. And of course, in the next issue, I'm assuming he runs into Batman.
Yep.
And so I'm excited to see how that goes because I haven't read that issue yet. But Jonah Hex continues to be super fun. Paul Meade and Gray and Moritat just delivering quality every single issue. Maybe the most consistent book of the new 52.
I think so.
And never gets enough press. And nope. I'll tell you, the one question I want to know from Jimmy Paul Meade, and maybe he won't even answer it, is how do they not just bang their head against the wall with the fact that they get so little promotion of their books over at DC? I'm sure, obviously, they enjoy working with DC characters and things like that, but it just amazes me. And this goes back to what we talked about before, about how DC, I think, could solve a lot of their PR problems if they started putting the creators up front instead of just the books and having the creators fade into the background.
Yeah.
You've got guys like Jimmy Palmiotti and Justin Gray and Moritat who show me another artist who has been on the same book consistently. This guy's done every issue.
Every issue.
So, again, they've got rock stars in the wings. They've just got to start promoting these guys. But I would love to know how they deal with the fact that they are putting out this book every month so consistently good and getting no press whatsoever.
Yep.
It's not even talked about.
No.
It's amazing. It amazes me.
Even throwing Batman in there, people still are not curiosity seekers
going
over.
Maybe that's their way of promoting it, is putting Batman in the book and maybe trying to bump sales.
Again, like you just said, pushing the creation and not the creators.
I mean, how long have these guys been writing Jonah Hex between the old 52 and the new 52 now?
Yeah. It's got to be 60. It's got to be almost 80 issues.
Right. So they are on a legendary run.
Yep.
Arguably the definitive run on this character now.
The original only went 92 issues.
So where's the press?
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Yep.
When you've got guys like this and you've got teams like this putting out books like this and you're not hearing about them all the time, I don't get it.
Nope.
So anyways, that's my rant for today. That is going to do it for this week's issues of New Comics. So we're going to take a break and come back and talk about some television.
So you go to a website, you click on what you want, and then you wait for its arrival. Now that's the excitement of most online shopping experiences, faceless and cold. But it certainly isn't the case at 80stees.com. The website is jam-packed with designs and characters that will bring back incredible memories, and once you order, know that you have a staff dedicated to quality that'll get your order to you very fast. 80stees.com will make sure the best dressed geek out there is you.
And we are back with your BoobTube and Big Screen Bonanza. And do you want to start with The Simpsons, since we were just talking about it off air? It was the season premiere.
Yes, it was.
And it was essentially Homer getting brainwashed and the family starting to believe that he was a terrorist.
Yes, and it's kind of a spoof on the show Homeland.
Right.
Which is I don't know the guy in it, but
Claire Danes is in it from My So-Called Life, which I love her, but I've never watched the show.
And it's the guy who was the main guy in Band of Brothers on HBO.
And he was also in a show called Life, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
Kind of a redhead dude.
Yeah.
Very unassuming looking.
He's a ginger. You could say it.
Very unassuming guy. But he, in this episode, Homer goes to a convention, and in this convention, he kind of staggers out drunk and ends up in a van. And Lenny and Carl come back, but they don't bring Homer. So all of a sudden, Homer comes back, and you see that something's a little different. And he's talking like this. And he goes in, and the way that they play it out is, because in Homeland, the guy is captured, and it's almost like a Manchurian Candidate kind of thing, that they brainwash him and he comes back and things are a little weird and he's a little different. Or, you know, so Homer is now, he's on a mat, and Lisa's looking at him going, he's praying to Mecca. And they basically say that he's an Islamic terrorist. He's not drinking beer. He's not eating pork. And then you find out later on that it's not, it has nothing to do with an Islamic terrorist group or a cell or anything like that. He jumped on a van. He got in a van with a bunch of hippies and was so drunk and confused, he was kind of hearing all the things. So this mat that he was praying on wasn't necessarily a mat. It was like the 12 steps or something.
Right. And they've convinced him to shut down the power plant.
Yes. And that was it.
What his big plot is he's going to shut down the power plant.
And he's not going to blow the plant up. He's going to shoot like a, I forgot exactly what it was, but it was like animal guts and other stuff into the ventilation system so it would always smell forever and you'll never get the smell out. Nobody's going to want to work there. So that's their way of correcting the nuclear problems, you know, without violence. And all of a sudden, Mr. Burns says, that ventilation system hasn't worked for 20 years. Yeah, you have a power plant without a good ventilation system. And, oh, did I say that? So you have a lot of craziness in there. But it was an interesting way to start the season, considering the last bunch have been – the Treehouse of Horrors.
And I think this weekend's one.
This week is the Treehouse of Horrors. So I'm excited about that one. But a pretty good way to start the season. But I am now in the mindset, I'd like to see an end because I don't want it to get bad. I want it to go out in a glory.
Well, Bob's Burgers also premiered this week and was awesome. The Belchers go camping because I think Tina missed her, like, it's not Girl Scouts, it's something else, but she missed her camping trip. So they decided to make up for it by taking her on a camping trip so that she could experience all of those things. So they all go. Bob decides, he brings, I forget what they call them. He calls it something different, but you know those multi-tools that people take? They got pliers in them.
They're, like a Swiss Army
knife. It's not a Swiss Army knife, though. It's like the big silver one that has the...
I know what you're talking about.
And he brings one of those. So he thinks that everything that he needs to survive is in that tool. So he decides he's going to catch his own fish. Meanwhile, Linda and the kids go over to a camper next door where they have all these provisions because they are people who are living out in the wilderness because they believe the world's going to end and stuff like that. So they take their supplies. They're having a nice dinner. Bob catches what looks like a pumpkin seed and ends up cooking it and gets vicious food poisoning because he didn't cook it good enough. So him and Linda sneak off to a hot spring later on. And while they're in the hot spring, he starts to get sick. But as he's trying to get out, he knocks the rocks over that form the barrier to this little hot spring, and they get washed down the river. So then the whole episode is about them trying to get back with the kids off on their own adventure. Classic episode of Bob's Burgers. I liked that they took them out of the restaurant for this one and put them in a whole different location. And I missed those characters quite a bit over the summer. All the banter back and forth, it's all back. So if you have waited for Bob's Burgers like I have, then it was a welcome return.
Always Sunny in Philadelphia. It's the pyramid scheme issue or
episode.
Can
I just tell you, I saw the episode, The Gang Breaks D.
Was that the worst thing you've ever seen in your entire life?
That was one of the funniest things I've ever seen. The comedian one. We talked about this on a previous episode. But the one where they make her believe that her stand-up comedy career is taking off, only to then have her believe she's going on the Conan O'Brien show, and they fly her around in a plane for hours, put a coat over her head, and drag her to backstage. And then when she goes through the curtain, she is standing in the bar. That was one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
My stomach, my heart broke watching that because that was so horrible.
And the fact that Dennis was so disturbed by that whole thing was the other icing on the cake. Yes. That was a great... great episode.
Yeah, and this one was great too. This was the everybody was falling for different pyramid schemes and what they were trying to do. And Roddy Piper was in this episode. He was kind of the drifting maniac, goofy guy that would end up in
which
all these things.
He played before. This was a recurring role for him, I think.
But it was another amazing episode. There's a lot of funny moments in there. Frank somehow ends up naked in a jungle gym and he's trapped in like the spiral thing. And they keep going to him, and he's like, you got to get me out of here. The kids are going to be at the park soon. And they're like, oh, yeah, we'll let you out first. But what is a pyramid scheme? So they're trying to ask him all these questions. And Dennis and Mac are like, you know, we're not going to fall for this. They end up buying a timeshare. They're making fun of Dee trying to sell these berries, this berry drink. But another amazing, amazing episode.
Yeah, I also, of course, saw New Girl. And in New Girl, Schmidt has been dating two different women, and that finally caught up with him in this episode. But he has now devoted himself to breaking up Nick and Jess.
Yes.
And what was beautiful. So you saw this week's
one? I saw it, yep.
So my favorite part of the episode is when he pulls Nick in his bedroom to tell him that he has been cheating on both of these women. And Nick does not want to hear it and doesn't want any part of it. And Schmidt says to him, we're in this together now because you know this.
Yeah.
And so then he has to try not to lie to Jess. And that was hysterical when he puts the motorcycle helmet on and he won't put the visor up because he doesn't want her to see his eyes. He has become the breakout star of this show.
Yes.
When New Girl started last year, it was all about what's her name's character? Zooey Deschanel. She was the attraction of that show.
Yep.
What has happened over the past year is that she has become one of the supporting cast, and this show is about Nick.
Yeah.
Nick has become the standout character on this show, and he is freaking hysterical.
Because he's so awkward. He's so awkward with everything.
Everything is just so, it's so great. And Winston is a better character this season. Like, the whole show, I think, has really stepped it up a level this season.
And
very
the best,
excited about it.
The best new comedy this year so far has been Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Which I still haven't seen.
I absolutely love it. This episode was Adam Sandberg's character is in a rut, not being able to solve anything. So they're trying to get him ways to do it. Meanwhile, you have the two lady cops that are there that are trying to get kids off the street. And they have the community girl, the community outreach girl, who's not a cop, going in there, and she does this crazy interpretive dance. And it's a hysterical show because it is six great characters that all seem to blend well together.
Right.
And it's a great premise. And I love that stupid sense of humor.
And of course, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Best episode so far of the two.
So this was the one where they end up going to Peru.
I believe it was Peru.
And they have found an artifact that is powered by Tesseract technology.
Which is great because every in this episode.
Which is just a fancy way of saying the cosmic cube.
Yeah, that's right. The thing that they mention. They mention these little things like Hydra had this, and you're like, ooh, there's the nod.
And so this episode was, I think the theme of this episode was the teammates who seem so different and so separate and not haven't gelled yet together as a team figure out that they work best when they try to solve problems together.
Yep.
That was basically what the episode was about, because you had a former love interest of Coulson, who now is in the Peruvian military, who infiltrates he brings her on board the plane as an ally, and turns out that she's not an ally. She wants the technology for herself. So the team ends up having to rescue him and basically rescue the plane and stuff like that. Ming-Na's character, Madeline May.
Yes.
She, to me, is the standout character of the series so far. She has a code name, The Cavalry, and she's like this legendary butt kicker who, so far in each episode, has been the one to just do the most damage.
Yeah.
She is the silent, butt-kicking, awesome character of the show, and I just love the sort of reverence that they all have for her. And she's a veteran actress who has been around for a lot of years now. So I like the fact that she's sort of an elder statesman on this show.
Yeah. And the whole building of that team I thought was great when they got all tied up and they had to figure out, and everybody used their strength. But I will say the weakness in this episode, the thing that kind of bothered me, was at the very end of it, and it's going to be a spoiler alert if you haven't seen it, but Sky, who's the one that they brought in, all of a sudden she's picking up her cell phone and she starts texting. And I looked at my wife and said, please don't be what I thought or what I'm hoping it's going to be. And she's like, what do you hope it isn't? And then as soon as she said it, it's exactly what it was, because now she's like the infiltrator inside. She's in the thing. And that was way too predictable about things. And I think that they took it to a level that I didn't want to go. Not that this has completely blown me out, because I thought this episode was amazing. And did you stick around for the credits?
I did.
Okay, so yeah, it's like the Avengers movies. You now have to stick around if you are DVRing it. Add an extra 2 or 3 minutes, because if the show starts a couple minutes late for something, you're going to miss this, which we did because it cut off late and I had to go back and watch it
on demand.
Something else.
Yeah.
But there was you had Samuel L. Jackson, and we were talking last week about, oh, you don't want to bring the big guns in, but you know what? I thought that was perfect, having him get – he was balling out Coulson.
Right, I'll be interested to see if they take it to the next level with, like – again, I don't think with some of the Marvel superhero guys, you can bring them in, but maybe they will.
I wouldn't be surprised if you had Thor show up, and even for like a brief thing like that.
Yeah.
Because they set it up enough where they keep throwing the nods like, oh yeah, you haven't lived till you saw see a god walk by you.
Right.
Stuff like that. But that show is just, that is really...
Like I could see them bringing in like Sif.
Yeah.
Or I could see them bringing in like, who is the guy that Ray Stevenson played, one of the Warriors Three?
Yeah, see, I don't know the Volstaff or Volgstaff or...
Yeah, like I could see it's those type of characters or the Kat Dennings character, yep. Even though she probably won't do it because she's on another network right now. But like those are the characters that I could see showing up more often in the show.
And it was sad because I saw the trailer for Thor 2 and saw her in there. And now she's her whole persona is two broke girls.
Yeah.
And that really kind of bummed me out.
I think it's still going to be a good movie, though.
Yes.
And who would have thought that the big draw for that movie would be Loki?
Oh, you see Loki in the preview and you get all fired up and excited.
Well, that's the thing now.
Yep.
You're not fired up about Thor.
No.
You're fired up about Loki.
Who I thought was the weak part of the whole thing when this all
right,
started.
Exactly. Which is really where I think they have done something amazing is they took this character that I certainly thought going into the first Thor movie was going to be the weak character.
Yep.
When they named him the major villain in the Avengers, I was like, no way. That's going to be totally lame. And... now I want him in every movie.
And this is why you and I are not working for Marvel Entertainment Movie
Division.
Exactly,
because we have no idea what we're doing. So there you go. Those are your that's your BoobTube big screen bonanza for this week. We are going to take a break and come back and talk about a cartoon.
The rest of the comic publishing world may finally be arriving to the party, but Drive-Thru Comics is the one that started it all. The first downloadable comic shop is still leading the way when it comes to digital comics. Featuring hundreds of publishers, excellent prices, and top-notch customer service, Drive-Thru is a great experience all around. Another thing that sets Drive-Thru apart from a lot of other digital comics platforms is this. When you buy a comic, you own it. You get a watermarked PDF file that you can read on your laptop, your tablet, phone, or any other device. You choose how you enjoy the comics you buy. So head over to drivethrucomics.com today, and on your way to checking out, download a free issue of Secret Identity.
And we are back to talk about a cartoon, and you are going to talk about a series that I also have on DVD, and it is quite something, and that is The Thing.
And by something, you mean not that good.
It's tough. Very, very, very Hanna-Barbera, Jabberjaws.
Yes.
It's nowhere near the quality of Scooby-Doo. Very much like a Scooby-Doo knockoff, like a Jabberjaws or...
It's Speed Buggy.
Speed Buggy is the other one
orange.
I was going to say. Yep.
So in 1979, 1978-79, we had probably one of the greatest cartoons of all time, and that was the Fantastic Four with Herbie the Robot. Even though Herbie was in it, they brought back every story. Like when you would watch an episode, you were watching the first appearance of Dr. Doom. It was perfect. Panel perfect. Loved it. They used Jack Kirby's art. I mean, it was amazing how they did that cartoon. And a lot of people will look at that as, despite the fact that the Human Torch wasn't in it,
right,
it still was a massive, great cartoon. So somebody had the great idea to say, why don't we not bring that back and we'll bring back The Thing and we'll make him like Jimmy Durante. Ooh, 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 ooh. Because I don't know. This is some horrible stuff. So 1979 to 1980, and I'm not going to sit there and rip this whole thing apart for the next 5 or 10 minutes, but there aren't a lot of bright spots in this. It was a half hour show, and you would have 15 minute episodes. So the two I'm going to talk about are To Thing or Not To Thing and Circus Stampede. One of the things that you will notice when you watch this cartoon is you could take The Thing out and put the Shmoo in there. And it'll still be the same. It's
right.
Just these were written for whatever character they could throw in there.
Right.
And I mean,
it's kind of like the X-Men go to the State Fair of Texas.
Yes, that could be the Avengers. That could be the Justice League.
Exactly.
If DC can't eat up enough money to have that insert in the paper. So as you watch these, the first thing you'll notice is it is very, like you said, it is so Hanna-Barbera-ish when you've got the main protagonist in this is like this rich kid.
Yeah, it's like a Captain Caveman. It's just very much that whole slapsticky, like really, really silly I think of, is it Muttley who you go,
yeah.
Yeah, that one.
So, yeah, that's about the only thing missing.
That's what
out
it's
of this
like. It's like the hand-wringing villain.
Yes.
You know, that the dastardly villain who's twirling his mustache and wringing his hands and
curses.
And then you throw the thing in there.
Yeah. And now the thing in this cartoon, and this is where I didn't watch the origin of it, I watched later on episodes. Benji Grimm is a little boy that walks around, and he is the one who has two rings on his hand. And when he puts them together and goes, thing ring, do your thing, all of a sudden these orange rocks cover him into this big thing guy who talks like Jimmy Durante.
Which is kind of cool. Ooh. I mean, it's not the comic book origin, yes. But it's pretty cool if you're going to make him a kid.
Yeah, but somehow he's still Benjamin Grimm test pilot. I still haven't figured that one out.
Okay.
Because in To Thing or Not To Thing, the whole point of this was a professor. He went to see a professor friend of his, and he says, you know what, Ben? I think that I've perfected the formula that is going to get the thing out of you, that you are just going to be little Benji Grimm. You're not going to be Ben Grimm test pilot. You are going to be little boy Benji Grimm, and you can have your life. Oh, boy, I can't wait to have my life back. Just in time, because he has to take this drink, and he can't go anywhere for 12 hours. But the rich kid, who is like just bothering him all over the place, is going to take a girl that he likes and his sister up to a mountain cabin. And they're going to go up there and they're going to go skiing. So, of course, Ben's like, oh, I can be the best skier ever. And the girl is saying, look, you can't go. The professor said, if you leave, we don't know what could happen to you. So as they're driving up, all of a sudden, little Benji Grimm turns orange because all the side effects and all these things are happening. And then he becomes a thing at the worst times. Like, he's out there ice skating, trying to impress this girl and show up the bad kid. And as he turns into the thing, he sinks in the ice because he's too big for the ice and falls through the hole. And this is how this whole episode goes. You know, they're going to go up and ski and, you know, I'm going to go down the one with the skull and crossbones because that's the bunny trail, right? No, that's not the bunny trail, you moron. That's the skull and crossbones. That's not bunny ears. And this is how this episode goes on. And you know, you get the little slapstick at the end, the little wacky ending with the dun, 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 and all that. Then the next episode I watched was Circus Stampede. And this one was probably worse than the first one that I watched. But again, they're magical. I will sit there and watch every one of these, but they're just not that good. They're good for what we're watching them for. They're good to recapture the moments, but I remember why I didn't watch these when they first came on. I probably saw the first two thinking it was going to be Marvel 2-in-1 every week, but found out very soon that it was going to be Marvel Poo-in-1.
Ooh, I just thought of that. You just thought of that. That was nice.
Just thought of that. So in Circus Stampede, the circus is coming to town, and so are three bumbling bikers that want to cause a lot of trouble. So they get a little mouse who they drive around on their motorcycle with, and the mouse has like the leather vest and the leather pants and the boots.
Because that lets you know that the mouse is a troublemaker.
Yep, mouse is bad news. And mice freak out elephants.
Oh, they totally do.
So is the elephant. I don't even know if that's true or not. I don't know a time when a mouse and an elephant could be in the same room.
I'm going to say that is such a universally believed thing that we have willed it into existence if it was not true to begin with.
We hope it is. So this bad biker mouse goes in, freaks out the elephants, rips the tents apart, all sorts of stuff. And then the bikers are now going crazy and the big gorilla gets loose. And of course, the big gorilla reaches over and grabs the blonde girl that's there with the thing and their other friends and starts to climb up the pole.
Sure.
So then he's got a thing ring, do your thing, become the thing and go up to the flagpole or the top of the circus tent, save the day, get the monkey down there. And then now all of a sudden, as penance, the biker dudes and the biker mouse have now got to help break down the tents, carry all the tents and do all that stuff. And the elephants have now scattered and like gone all over the place. So they got to bring the elephants back. And every episode, now some of the episode titles, Bigfoot Meets the Thing, Double Trouble for the Thing, Beach Party Crashers, The Thing and the Absent-Minded Inventor, Gone Away Gulch, The Big Bike Race, Decepto the Great, The Thing and the Queen. These are just episodes, again, that you could really write any character. You could put Space Ghost in there, and it's going to probably be the same. But you and I, of like mind, went and bought this, and we
I think, actually, John Cimino may have given me his copy of it, which is where I got mine from.
Yeah, and I think I got mine, and thinking about New York Comic Con, I've got my list of DVDs I need to look for. Obviously, yep. Turbo Teen, still yours.
Yes.
Turbo Teen, you could have put him in these adventures, but they're fun to watch. Just don't expect anything. And that's it. If you go in expecting nothing, you're going to have a lot of fun with them.
Well, there you go. That is your Saturday morning special for this week. We're going to take a final break and come back with your creator spotlight.
For the best in comics, gaming, sports cards, and toys, it's got to be Most Excellent. Providing the best service and coolest stores for almost 20 years, Most Excellent will be the only stop you need for all your needs. Not only is Most Excellent the official local comic shop of the Secret Identity podcast, it's the local shop of those who like service, quality, and no-hassle shopping. So check it all out at www.mostexcellentcomics.weebly.com. And on eBay, it's one word, Most Excellent Collectibles.
And welcome back to the Creator Spotlight, and a pretty big name this week.
Mike Mignola. This guy has created Hellboy, and he goes into a lot of that, which was, I think, my favorite part of talking to him was I could ask him that because I don't know the origins of Hellboy. I don't know how he came up with it. And he didn't look at me and go, "Are you stupid, kid?" He went in and told me the origins.
Well, and just how he got into creator-owned work in the first place and what he was doing before that and all that kind of stuff.
And mentioning Fish Police.
Which is where you start the conversation, if I'm not mistaken.
I mentioned Fish Police, and you will not see this, but his eyes lit up, and you could see the brain going back to that time when Steve Moncluse, who was the creator of Fish Police, was the big name in the industry and the big guy that brought all these guys in, and you just see all this. But Mike is a great guy. His wife is amazing. And I got in there right before the show even started. He saw me. He said, "Let's do this. We'll talk." And he doesn't do a lot of interviews, which was really made me feel good when I found that out.
No, and there's a part of the interview, too, where you get into the Hellboy movies and, you know, where he feels that they differ and sort of when the eureka moment was for him when he was watching, you know, from the set and things like that. It's a very interesting conversation. As we mentioned at the top of the show, there are a couple of curse words in this interview. Couple of poop bombs that he drops, but nothing nothing major. I would say, again, it's a PG-13 interview, but definitely a great listen. He seems like a great guy and some nice insight into the different incarnations of Hellboy. So Mike Mignola is your creator spotlight of the week. That is going to do it for this episode of Secret Identity. This is Brian Letenner signing off for The Matt Man. Have a wonderful rest of your week, and we will be back in 7 days.
Bye-bye.
And the Creator Spotlight coming to you from Boston Comic Con, www.bostoncomiccon. It's where you want to go for information on this year's show that you obviously missed and making plans to come next year. This is an awesome show, a great time. And we're joined now by somebody who I have been a fan of for an awful long time, and people are going to be a little excited when they hear the name, Mike Mignola. How are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you?
I am doing well. I can't ask you right now how the show's been going so far because it hasn't really started yet.
It's true. But we have plenty of room and more than enough chairs, so that puts it ahead of a lot of shows, you know, right off the bat.
There we go. So before we start talking about the character that you're obviously known for, and that is Hellboy, I want to go back a little bit to Fish Police. I was flipping through some back issues that I picked up and saw that you did a pinup in one of them, and I laughed about it because I don't know if you realize when you're doing something back then, the legacy it may have, the non-legacy it may have. What was your whole association with the guys that were doing Fish Police?
Steve Moncluse, I can't remember how we hooked up with him. I think we may have gone to the same comic book store. Art Adams was very tight with him for a while. He hung out with us. And I think I met him after the Fish Police thing had started, and it was in that black and white boom period, and he was doing great. And we just thought it was fun. I mean, it was exciting to see a guy doing his own stuff. None of us were doing our own stuff at the time. My good friend Steve Purcell, who went on to create Sam and Max Freelance Police, his first Sam and Max was published by Steve Moncluse. Yeah. I think at some point, Steve was urging us all to do create our own stuff and was offering to publish all our stuff.
Wow.
So we were kind of making stuff up. I think Art Adams... Yeah, Arthur never got around to doing something, but Steve finally, you know, did Sam and Max for him. So it was an exciting time.
Now, it's interesting to think because I didn't even go from maybe Fish Police being influential in a way to getting you to be self-published and things like that. When you were doing a little bit of work at Marvel and DC, my first introduction to you was the Rocket Raccoon miniseries. And it's amazing to see that character and how the whole Guardians of the Galaxy has grown. I mean, do you look at that and think, wow, I had something to do with that guy?
Yeah, a little bit. I didn't create the character. He'd been around. He'd, you know, a couple appearances before I did him. Certainly not one of those characters I ever expected to resurface at Marvel. He always did seem to have a weird kind of almost cultish following. So, yeah, I it's hard for me to take any credit for the character. You know, it was just a job, but it was, you know, my first job. So, you know, there's... I've got warm feelings about the character.
I'll definitely take credit when we see the movie and I can say, hey, I interviewed the guy that drew the miniseries, so I'll be taking a little credit for you.
All right, you do that.
So let's move on to a little bit to Hellboy. Now, the character obviously has just blown up into an icon in the comic world. I mean, the movies have been great. You probably told this story a million and one times, but I have never heard the origins or how the whole Hellboy thing started with you and how you came up with this basic character. So would you mind sharing a little of that?
Yeah, I have told that one a million times. Well, all I ever wanted to do was draw monsters. And, you know, I banged around Marvel and DC for 10 years trying to find a job where I could draw monsters. And eventually, Archie Goodwin asked me to plot a Batman story. Now, I never gave a shit about Batman, mm-hmm. but I did make up a supernatural story around Batman. And it was called Sanctum. It was a Legend of the Dark Knight one-issue thing. A buddy of mine scripted it, but I wrote the plot. And I had a really good time. And when that thing was done, I was really going, I think I know what kinds of stories I want to do. And, mm-hmm. and the only way I'm going to get to do these kinds of stories is make them up myself. I was a long way from thinking about being a writer, but I did think if I know the kind of stories I want to do, I'm probably better off. I mean, you know, do I make up, continue to make up stories and shoehorn other guys' characters mm-hmm. in? Or if I know what I want to do I make up my own guy? And making up my own guy seemed like a good idea. And just the timing was right because Art Adams was playing with doing a creator-owned book. Frank Miller was already at Dark Horse doing his stuff. Dark Horse wanted me at Dark Horse. Dave Gibbons was doing something. Jeff Darrow was doing something. So it was very fortunate timing that I got lumped in with that group of guys. When it comes to negotiating a deal, it's always good to be standing next to Frank Miller and saying, we'll take the same deal you gave him. So that worked out pretty well. And, yeah, basically, I'd gone to John Byrne and said, I'm not a writer, but John and I had worked very well together on some stuff at DC, and John said, I'll help you out. John never tried to make it his thing. He made up the names of a couple of the characters, but my original idea was I'll just give him a list of shit I want to draw, and he'll cobble it together into a plot. Well, over time, because I was in the middle of some other project, by the time I got that thing ready to go, I had already come up with a plot.
Yeah.
So I drew it, and then I had to write it so John knew what everybody was saying. So all the time, John was kind of going, you know, you could write this yourself. So he really just, he knew insecurity-wise, I just wasn't ready to do it. So he just kind of helped me out, and when we finished the first miniseries, he said, I think now you're on your own.
Very nice.
He really just acted as the training wheels on that first miniseries.
And that was great, and that really got the ball rolling. I admit, I was very late to the Hellboy world. When word of the movie came out and you started seeing the pictures, that was when I thought, you know what, I need to check this out. Glad I did. When you saw the movie...
That is what I hoped the movie would be. I was hoping that movie, if nothing else, would be a nice commercial for the books.
And that's what it did. It brought me in. When you saw the movie for the first time, did you look and go, this is exactly what I visioned? Because I thought you did a great job.
Not at all. I mean, it's nothing against it.
Yeah.
But no, it's so different. And because I was there when they were making it,
mm-hmm.
you know, so you know, it's you don't have that moment. I'm trying to think if there was a moment like that. Well, when I met Ron, we knew Ron was the right guy.
Mm-hmm.
Del Toro always knew Ron was the right guy. Someone had suggested Ron to me even before anybody was seriously talking about it, and I thought, oh yeah, Ron. So actually when Del Toro and I sat down, and Del Toro said, we should play Hellboy. I said, I know, and he says, I know, and boom, this guy, you put the cards on the table,
yep.
they match. So, yeah, it was cool, and it was a fun process, but I mean, story-wise, it's completely different than my stuff, or largely different. I think there was actually a moment on the second movie where Ron came out, and he was dressed much more like he was in the comic. You know, he had no shirt, but he had the coat, and I went, now that looks like my character. It was weird, because you're well into the second movie, and there's a million characters on stage, most of whom I made up, But that was the moment where I went, oh, that's funny, that's my comic.
Yeah. Now, you've given a lot of creative rein to some other writers and artists to do Hellboy. Was that hard for you to do, to say, here's my baby, just don't screw it up too much or change it a little too much? Or was it something where you're confident and comfortable enough to say, here you go?
Well, with all the real Hellboy stories, I mean, we did these two books called Weird Tales, mm-hmm. where other people could just play fast and loose with the Hellboy stuff. But that's just two books, and that's because I was busy working on the movie, and we wanted to keep some presence out there. But other than that, all the Hellboy stories, all the real Hellboy stories I've written, or I think it's one of them I co-wrote. So I've kept a pretty tight hand on that stuff. I've been very selective about who works on the Hellboy stuff. So, it's easier handing off other characters to other people, but Hellboy, for the most part, I keep a pretty tight rein on.
That's pretty good. Now, people are starting to come in, so I know your line's going to pile up, and we'll let you go. But thank you for joining us. Thank you for creating a world that quite a few of us really don't ever want to get out of, and we appreciate that.
I have no plans to end the world anytime soon. Well, I am ending it. I mean, it's getting uglier, and it's getting worse, and Hellboy's actually already dead, so I don't know where the hell he's going from here. But, the book will be around for the foreseeable future.
There we go. Now, thank you very much for joining us. And so wanted to get another Creative Spotlight. So on behalf of our guest, Mr. Mike Mignola, this is the Matt Man. Have yourself a good one. And he's waving goodbye. Till you talk again soon.